America was established largely for the purpose of religious freedom, but in some cases that freedom has eroded, for instance, in our public schools. Attorney Jeremy Dyes writes, quote, "Every year, my firm, First Liberty Institute, receives dozens of requests for legal help from students and teachers who face hostility from school administrators and attorneys for simple acts of religious expression. Despite recent rulings by the U.S. Supreme Court that clarified the rights of students and teachers to express their religious faith in too many school districts around the nation, the knee-jerk reaction to religious activity is intolerance, hostility, and censorship." End quote from Jeremy Dyes, who is senior counsel of First Liberty. He recently wrote all this in an op-ed to which we'll link. So Jeremy Dyes now joins us. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and this is Vocal Point. Jeremy, thank you for joining us. And wow, it's really an amazing topic, religious freedom in the public schools. You basically maintain that some of these administrators and school officials need an education when it comes to the First Amendment.
Well, probably all of us need that education, or at least a renewal, to remember exactly what the Founding Fathers laid out for us 249 years ago. But certainly our school officials seem to be limiting religious liberty for its teachers and especially its students on occasion, and more often, probably at a greater pace than the general society itself. And so it's good for us at the beginning of the school year to look back, to think through, to remember what our Founding Fathers wanted, which was a public square that was welcoming to, tolerant of, that appreciated the contributions that religion provides to a society, and so afforded to people who follow those religious beliefs a great deal of freedom to exercise those faith, that faith, and they did not leave off any area of society. They certainly did not exclude religious liberty from its public schools, and yet far too often, we have to send letters and sometimes file lawsuits to school districts to ensure the rights of students to exercise their faith freely under the Constitution, as is their guarantee.
Okay, in 1962, in Engle v. Vitale, they basically said this state-written prayer is unconstitutional. 1963, a prayer of the Our Father in some school, you know, in Baltimore, Madeline Murray O'Hara said, "Oh, that's offensive. You can't have that." So they said that's unconstitutional. Then later, Bible reading as devotional was cut out in Abingdon v. Shep. And then later, the Ten Commandments were said, "Oh, you can't have that in school." That's what the Supreme Court said. So have they abrogated some of their earlier decisions? Explain this to us, if you would.
Well, perhaps the most dangerous decision that came in the last 50 years is Lemon versus Kurtzman, which every time religion popped up in the public discussion, whether that's in a classroom, in the hallways, or somewhere else within our public schools, or even outside of that into many other areas, when religion intersected with anything that had to do with the government or the public square, religion, it seemed, would lose under that case. I mean, that was the holding of that case for 50 years, if there was anything to do with endorsement. Anytime religion and government intermixed, it was religion that would get the boot. Well, that case under Coach Kennedy's case, remember, that's the coach that prayed after a football game and found himself terminated. Well, he took that case all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States, and the court overturned that case. They had overruled Lemon versus Kurtzman, and so it is no longer good law. And importantly, or just as importantly, no longer are the cases that relied upon Lemon versus Kurtzman good law. However, it seems like some school board attorneys sort of forget that what that means, and they still advise their clients at times to follow at least the principles of Lemon versus Kurtzman. And then school officials themselves, with whether or not they receive the advice of counsel, recall that most of their lifetime has been spent underneath this regime of Lemon versus Kurtzman, and they show religion the door whenever it comes into the front schoolhouse gates. But that is not what is supposed to happen. Instead, what's supposed to happen is we're supposed to honor the religious liberty of our students and our teachers. They don't have to shed those constitutional rights when they walk through the schoolhouse gates. They're supposed to be able to reference them, at least our students are, within their class assignments, the class discussion, in their hallways, talking about it, making clubs at school, all the things that go into the typical life of a student. And no less should that be a part of their religious experience, or their religious experience should be brought upon all those parts of their school day life as well. And yet far too often we have school officials that forget about that because, again, we've lived for so long underneath that other case. But let's now turn the page on that. Let's live like a free people, like the Founding Fathers intended us for us to live as a free society, welcoming religion wherever it may find itself within our society.
Okay, so are there any post-Coach Kennedy case guidelines for religious expression in the public schools?
Well, number one, you can go to firstliberty.org. We've got an entire kit for our students, for our parents to remember what their rights actually are. We'd like you to download that, print it out, or order a copy of it so that you can have it at the ready, so that if you have any questions, like sometimes it doesn't seem very obvious to you that this could be a religious liberty concern, well, look at the document that we spent a lot of time writing so that you understand what your rights actually are. And if you've got a question about it after reading that, then give us a call. Go to firstliberty.org, click on the request for legal help, and we can look at that case and figure out whether or not we need to jump in and protect your rights or not. But in terms of other cases, there's cases going on all the time. We just represented a student up in New York who wanted to be able to decorate her parking space. This is a thing now where students, senior students, it seems, are able to decorate their parking spaces with certain customized messages that they create. And other ones were able to paint on there whatever they wanted to paint. But when Sabrina Stevens wanted to paint a Bible verse on her parking space, the school district told her that she could not do that. Well, we stepped in, we protected her right to be able to do that very thing, and she was able to later on go back and amend that painting on her parking space. And this is the case over and over again where these situations are brought forward. We stand up on the rights of our students, and most often they win.
You know, it's very interesting. I mean, even when you read some of the earlier decisions, which, were overall anti-religious, even there's still silver lining. For example, you look at I think it's Abington v. Shemp from 1963, if I'm not mistaken. It said no devotional reading of the Bible is allowed. However, it says there's absolutely no problem with even teaching the Bible as history, in the public schools. But the first part of it is what dominated everything. So, to use a phrase from a different context, it's as if the Bible's treated as asbestos in the public schools.
Yeah, it's almost like religion is a virus that the school officials are worried is going to get loose and infect everybody inside the school system itself. And so they work hard to quarantine it, to keep it off of campus, to make everybody wear a mask so they don't spread it anymore. But that's not how we're supposed to treat religion in the public square, and certainly not within our student life either. And so the default mode for our school officials ought to be that we welcome religion inside the public square and inside our public schools, especially where the students are trying to exercise that religious freedom, rather than defaulting to this idea that we've got to kick religion to the curb. We can get into some of the finer points of what that's supposed to look like when it comes to teaching the Bible and things like that. There's going to be a lot more cases, I think, to suss that out. But let's not lose ground where we actually are. Number one, students, you ought to be able to practice your religion in class assignments, class discussions, in the hallways, etc. You should be able to do that freely without any kind of problem. When it comes to the schools themselves doing some things, there's going to be some conversations to be had about that. But by and large, we should be sort of nonplussed about the presence of religion within our public schools. It should just be one more thing that is a part and parcel of who we actually are as a society. Why would we be surprised that in a country that guarantees religious freedom, we would have students that want to exercise their religious freedom?
Yeah, it's interesting, too. The very founding fathers who gave us the First Amendment, which says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, they also gave us the Northwest Ordinance, which mentions in Article 3 that this, and this is a direct quote from the founding fathers, religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary for good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged, end quote. Now, wait a minute. Those are in those days when they talked about religion, that was, basically 98% Christianity, in one stripe or another. So in other words, the founders were saying religion, morality, and knowledge is what we need, and therefore we should have education. But today, like you point out, education, is religion-free in so many places.
Well, far too often school officials view neutrality as an enforced secularism. But that is certainly not neutrality. That is putting the thumb on the ideology scale that favors an ideology above another one. I think Justice Gorsuch said it best in the Alito opinion, or in the Kennedy opinion, where he reminded us that the First Amendment has two clauses when it comes to religion, the free exercise clause and the establishment clause. And he said that these are supposed to work in tandem with one another. They're supposed to be complementary with each other, restraining the government from telling you what you have to believe and protecting the right of those who believe in something to act according to those beliefs. But far too often, school officials have trotted out the Establishment Clause as a cudgel to be used against the Free Exercise Clause. Well, that's not going to work anymore. School officials are not allowed to pit those two against each other. They're supposed to utilize the First Amendment as a cohesive whole. And as the free speech clause is included in there as well, we're reminded that the Free Speech Clause and the Free Exercise Clause, well, they doubly protect religious speech. And so in some respects, you might say that religious speech on campus, well, it's deserving of double honor and double protection.
Coach Joe Kennedy is really quite the hero, and so are you guys at ADF.
Well, yeah, at First Liberty Institute, we're working hard to make sure that Coach Kennedy and others are able to live by their faith and exercise their faith freely across this country.
I said ADF, but I mean First Liberty as well, of course. But and this was a First Liberty case primarily, right? You guys fought on this for, and he had to fight for this for years, and it cost him a lot personally, as I understand it. And he was an average Joe, as his book is called. He was just wanting to make sure that, you know, hey, this isn't right. Now, he didn't force anybody to say prayers, right, in his football huddles after the games?
Now, it was a deep honor to represent Coach Kennedy for almost 8 years, 7.5 years, and that was at multiple levels, from the district court to the Supreme Court, back down and up again. And at the end of the day, no, Coach Kennedy was fired because he took a knee in 15 or 30 seconds of silent prayer. That was it. That was the reason he was kicked off of his job. And so to be able to go to the Supreme Court to overturn Lemon versus Kurtzman, to ensure that students, teachers are guaranteed the right to not shed their constitutional rights when they walk through the schoolhouse gates, to enshrine that into the law and to make sure school officials follow it, would be a highlight of my legal career.
Tell me, are there implications to the Ten Commandments being allowed in public places from the Coach Kennedy case decision?
Well, certainly Coach Kennedy's case, but also another case we took to the Supreme Court at First Liberty Institute called American Legion versus the American Humanist Association. And in both of those cases, the court said the way we're going to interpret things when it comes to religion in the public square, now that the Lemon Test is gone, now that we have to look at this differently, we're going to look over our history and see what kind of traditions have come out of our history as a nation. And since the Ten Commandments have a very storied history when it comes to expression in the public square, I don't see that as posing a significant issue. We're going to continue to litigate that case, of course, all the way up and down the courts right now, even. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's very historical. We've got Ten Commandments monuments on Capitol grounds, whether that's in Arkansas or Texas or elsewhere. We have the Ten Commandments posted in various places in the school district, in schools, for instance. The McGuffey Reader and the New England Primer would also reference the Ten Commandments within their subjects. So it's sort of hard to imagine a country that had them as part of the actual curriculum of our public schools now saying that they shouldn't be posted up on the walls. But let's just say that this case gets to the Supreme Court of the United States. Well, the litigants are going to have to go through the front doors of the Supreme Court underneath the watchful eye of Moses holding the Ten Commandments. And as they're having argument inside the courtroom itself, the justices are going to have Moses with his Ten Commandments looking over their shoulder to the left of them as they hear argument. So I don't think the founding fathers were anything surprised at the Ten Commandments, nor should we be. This has been a long part of our history and our tradition. It underlies the very basis for laws in this country and everywhere else, for that matter. If we're just referencing it as a historic document, that's perfectly fine. It is certainly an educational topic for our students to benefit from.
Well, we have 30 seconds left. Is it a new day in America post the Kennedy decision?
Absolutely. We're all more free today than we have been most of our lifetimes. And so we should go and live like a free people. To learn more about how to do that, go to firstliberty.org.
Well, Jeremy, thank you so much. And thanks for all the great work you do and Kelly Shackelford and all the good folks at First Liberty. You are affiliated with ADF too, right? In the sense that other, you know, legal groups are working together for the same common good.
We're all on the same side of the V, but First Liberty Institute's its own organization, and I'm very proud to work with it.
All right, Jeremy, thank you so much. All the best. God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you.